Good morning. Happy Wednesday, July 16th, 2025. Officially halfway through 2025. Here with another episode of Value First AI Daily. And my best AI bud, Nico. How are you doing this morning?
Doing well, sir. Doing very well. You know how it is. Another day, another revelation, another. I mean, like, yeah, new toys to play with, new foundational theories to play around with. I can't say like enough like new foundational stuff to play around with.
Yeah, well, still understanding foundational concepts, right? Yep. And I think that's so much about like there's so many ways that the learning curve is happening with AI right now. And I'm just going to dive in just because it's easiest to explain on screen. But this is one of those things where it's like, you know, especially when it relates to vibing positively and vibing negatively, context windows have always been a feel like, almost like I'm the one that's taking crazy pills because I'm the one that likes Claude. Everybody else is telling me how great GPT is and, you know, Gemini, and you just give it all of the stuff and it won't ever cut you off. And in my experience, that is part of the value I've received from Claude is like, I know, and now I'm going to show you some confirming evidence for the way that it's been built out. It tries to limit that context rot situation. Thank you so much for sharing that video today. Yep. Because I only had to hear enough about GPT from you and George to go over and, you know, create a value first project over there and try. But within the first few chats, I could see, even though I could go as long as I wanted to in the same chat, there was a point where I didn't feel fully trusting of the results. And as soon as I start to ask the question or feel like I have to remind of stuff that happened earlier in the chat, mm-hmm. that's where it's like, okay, we're outside of the, you know, viable context window at this point. But still this wish for just never getting cut off, never being told no. Like it's what we want.
Yep.
Right. So like a month or two ago, like probably less than that. I don't know. It feels like just yesterday sometimes. I had been building out Value First and I had already started because projects in Claude, you can put as many files as you want, and it's about like the token size total of the files versus like Gemini and GPT and in Perplexity of limits to the number of files. So you try to pack everything in these huge files. But the context of the project, all right, if we go into here, like this project capacity, you can see this retrieving now, right? So basically it's ragging on the information and it wasn't doing that prior to, you know, a couple months ago. And this would be over 100%.
Yep.
Like, right. And I remember the day I told Nico, I was like, oh my God, like the 60% capacities. Cause I knew not to go over that. Like if you started going over that, you would hit the chat limits. Like immediately you could get some really good one shots, mm-hmm. but it was hard to have a conversation because it's using this context and this, it's tokening this, you know, project stuff every time. And every time you start the chat. And so 60% went to 6. And I was like, okay. But what I've realized is now I'm going back down to try and hit 6.
Right.
Because as soon as I see this word retrieving, each chat, like which starts at 7%, each chat starts with a retrieval like task of the project files.
Yeah.
Right. And so as soon as I started testing this, I was throwing in like transcripts and just everything that I've been doing with Value First into this one place, right? Just to see. And I could, and I felt it, you know, very much that it's starting to get stuff mixed up, right? And that's where, because if I don't give clear instructions on what to search for and why,
mm-hmm.
it's forcing me to, like, instead of expect it to know what to look for, I'm just re-adding the file, like, in conversation.
So here's this other thing that, like, it should have dawned on me sooner. It kind of did, and it's not, it's just something that I ignored because it's like, well, language models, so they should do it, not me. I kind of fell into that like a little too quickly out the gate. And to your point, I do the same thing with Claude. It's like, I'll work through it and then I'll add what I'm working on to the project because that's so easy. But what I keep forgetting is that content added to Claude in the way that it's added doesn't necessarily have context to it. It just has like a title and then maybe it's got a bunch of stuff, like depending on what it was that I wrote, right? Like it doesn't actually have keywords. It doesn't have like real, like a meaningful description to it. It's just like a title and the stuff, right? And we know from using the Oracle that like that, you know, it can, like it can do some pretty like in-depth searching. But at the same time, when you look at the Oracle's files and the way they're structured, they're all markdown and they're all like very, very specific and they all have categorization in them. So I was playing around with that yesterday guys, the update is coming. I know I promised an update to Triple H at the beginning of July. You know, I don't blame, but thank. You should thank Josh Oakes for just stabbing gigantic holes into the test version, because this was one of the things that came out of it. Was I ended up taking one of the files. I have to now go through the rest of them, so it's a little bit of a I wouldn't call it painstaking, but it's just housekeeping. Had to go through one of the files and just do some housekeeping, do some relabeling, add some keywords in there, add some descriptors where it felt like it was necessary, and voila, like the performance of it shot through the roof. Where it was like kind of getting stuff before, it was one-shotting it now, because it just very easily knew based on what I was saying and the keyword next to, you know, that was assigned to that section, knows exactly where to go looking. It's like, oh, if I can't find it here, I'll go look at this place, or I'll go look at this place, versus just dumping everything in there with no descriptors, no headings, no subheads, no sections, like no definitions. It's just having to play needle in the haystack and crawl through everything and hopefully find the thing that you wanted, right? But especially in the case, like, so a great example with Triple H is API references. There are API references and there's API guides. Both have very similar information in them, but that information is completely different in terms of how it applies. So you could ask Triple H for something like, you know, hey, how do I access, you know, custom objects and pull property data or something? And it may find it in the guide, or it may find it in the reference. So you might get the answer the first time around. You might get the wrong answer. Like I was getting a lot of feedback like that. So yeah, I mean, it's not just, you know, it's not just the change to Claude. I've actually noticed it with custom GPTs too. Like they very much ninja change these things and just kind of like sneak them in there. Cause the context size change wasn't, you didn't like log in and it was like, hey, context size bigger. It was just like you logged in and all of a sudden there was this, you didn't even notice it until you actually looked at your projects, I don't think, realistically.
Right.
So yeah,
and I think there's so much of that going on. Cause that's another topic I wanted to hit on, just this. Because what we're talking about is like naming conventions and tagging data right now. And we've heard about, I forget which company it was, but Facebook bought, and now they're going to lose all their business. And right. But it was all about like tagging, like data tagging is like how you create context. It's just the right level of structure that needs to be applied. That's why the Oracle works. Like there's very specific IDs, and you know, even when you don't contextualize the ask, when Claude comes back or when the AI comes back, it will use those IDs. And now we have the context we need to understand like where it's coming from and what influenced the answers. And just to show like this other example, right? So this is a different Claude. It's a value first measurement. And you can see here, it's a normal chat. It doesn't do any search of the project, right? This one from a couple of days ago, when I was starting up this new podcast with Danielle, the first thing it did was look through the project, right? Yep. And this is one of those things where it's like, you, as soon as I start seeing it show up with irrelevant like responses, there is the hope that it is deciding what's relevant or not, even though it shows all six, but yep, it's just not bearing out, right? So this is setting the context instead of relying on the whole project files because it can't, like the token windows are too big. And so the difference is that I've deleted some files, got this down to 6%. And then the next set I had, it didn't do that. And all of a sudden, the feelings, this is where the measurement of it is so hard, but this is why the word vibe works so much, right? Because it's just those feelings of like, all right, I'm wondering like where it got that information, or did it actually get it from the right file, or is it just getting lucky, right? There's chats where I get some of those feelings, and there's chats where I don't, right? And the chats where you don't feel amazing, right?
Right?
So this whole concept of context engineering, and again, you don't like, it's not dissimilar from the way that CRMs need to be built out in any data system. Like that's why naming conventions, that's why, you know, metadata, all that stuff is so important for somebody without context, which we ask for all the time. Like, hey, you're new, you don't have any context of our business agency, I'm going to pay you thousands of dollars, and then you're just going to come in and tell us what's wrong, like immediately. Meanwhile, we don't have any of our own context shit together, right? Oh, but we don't want to go through the discovery process. We just need you to come in and build workflows.
Yeah, and the thing that gets me is like, well, it doesn't get to me, but it's like the new move forward, obviously, that everybody talks about is clean data. You have to have clean data, clean data, clean data. There's obviously you have to have clean data, right? But it's also obviously a different type and a different way. And so I wouldn't say, I'm not a pioneer on this thing, I wouldn't say that you need clean data. I would say you need organized data. You need to organize your data. You need to, you know, clean up the stock room. It's actually all those boxes and loose papers and all that. It doesn't matter if all the information on those loose paper and all on those boxes and on the shelves, doesn't matter if it's all correctly written in there and correctly filled in. If it's scattered all over the file room, that's what we're talking about here. Like, so imagine that the project knowledge base as being a file room, right? And either you can label everything properly and in its place, put it in its box and put it right on the proper place in the shelf where that's also labeled, or you can just chuck shit in there and hope for the best. Right. And I got to tell you, there is kind of a way around the chuck shit in there and hope for the best. The instructions on projects have also gotten quite a bit bigger. The context there. And so how I've been leveraging that lately is a little bit the same as Triple H, where I give it the instruction on like, hey, if the user gives you XYZ keywords or is mentioning XYZ phrases, you'll find that information in ABC file, right? So there's context in the system prompt before I even like ask it for anything, just so that it knows, hey, here's, let's say, a series of shortcuts, just in case the user mentions these things. You know, again, given, let's say, 20 project files, it's up to that 10%. So it's over the mark where it's going to be able to accurately hit it. That's one of the ways in which you can get it to try to fine tune. It's not 100% foolproof. I've been playing with it over the last couple of days. It's way better than just throwing it in there and hoping for the best. It's like, I would say it's 50 to 60% better than that, like more accurate. But yeah, you know,
this is exactly what I was talking about with Clemen yesterday, after our show, because he's come up with the concept of like a data firewall, and actually has built an app or some kind of functionality that you can add to HubSpot to like all the scoring that we, so much of the data analysis we do is garbage because there's data gaps, right? Yeah. And a lot of this understanding, it is accepting that you're not going to have clean data. Like, it's just, it's not a thing, right? Because you have constant process happening, adding data to the system. And unless you start from scratch and map all your processes, train all your teams, enforce all the things so that nobody can put in bad information in any of the fields ever, which if you're just logging emails into the system, like there's some messy data coming in. So accepting right. that the data is going to be messy and understanding what it takes to manage and maintain it, you know, successfully is what we were talking about. And meanwhile, we know this is like the number one problem of businesses, especially as it relates to leveraging AI.
Mm-hmm.
Yet there doesn't seem to be like a lot more solutions outside of like, oh, what do you do when you first come into a portal? How do you do stuff? Right. So that's what we started to jam on yesterday. But I do want to say, like, meanwhile, and this is where there's hope, like, but it's the intangible, like unmeasurable side of stuff. Right. And just hear me out on this. Right. Like, especially with the algorithm, LinkedIn algorithm, like which everybody's been struggling with lately, right? Oh, why am I seeing stuff from 3 or 4 weeks ago? What we started talking about yesterday is, imagine if AI is just, they are developing better AI, which is based on behavior instead of gaming the system, right? Like one engagement equals, you know, this many algorithm points. I know it doesn't work like this, so don't send me the hate mail. But like, you know, the whole reason that we get, if I use the hashtag AI, I am guaranteed to get an AI generated comment on this show. It's happened 100% of our shows so far, right? And
because everybody's got agents that go sniffing LinkedIn for it, right?
Right. What's coming clear is that apparently all these agents are built to just see if there's no engagement, add a comment. If there is, like, don't worry about it, because we used to get like 3 and 4 comments. But what if, as AI develops and they add it to the algorithm, we're seeing the 3 and 4 week stuff because it matches our like behavior that it understands while it's implementing this new training, this new model of how it looks at the feed. Because yesterday, you know, I usually don't talk about leads as much as I have been lately, like in support of lead scoring and value first scoring. But it's like a digital RAS is happening. And I'm starting to see other people finally say, we're removing the MQL. Let's remove the word lead. Like, I'm like, where is this
really
like, coming from? Yeah. And there is an element of the quality of life is just gonna start raising up in terms of the digital systems that we use, because there's so much work being done to handle unstructured data. right? We're seeing Breeze get a little bit better in HubSpot because of the frame.ai acquisition. But this feeling, like, imagine if instead of our activity in our actions, which is really the only thing that algorithms could have been based on before, AI can understand behavior from a sentiment perspective. Mm-hmm. Like, and that can drive the feed. And inherently, naturally, we all want it to drive the feed because we're just going to see stuff that is valuable for us. And we won't know all the ways that AI is going to improve it. It's just going to start feeling like better outcomes. And if you don't think that LinkedIn understands that concept and they have the best CRM database ever created, probably ever will be created, that's where they want to drive. That keeps people in the platform. That dopamine hit of like, yeah, that's, man, that was the right thing for me to see right now. Right?
Yeah.
So I'm fired up today, I guess.
You know, one thing that really is interesting to me, and this is not just LinkedIn, this is also Facebook, there's a lot of social platforms. Something I find very interesting is the like hyper-targeting of mobile users, almost specifically. And the reason I say that is because if you're on desktop, you can change your feed. And this isn't against anything you're saying. It's actually more to the point where if you wanted to use your own methodology, let's say, and you want to sort by, and there's only two options. You can either sort by most popular or most recent, but still, at least you can sort by most recent, which you would want to do on mobile as well, but you just can't. I couldn't tell you why. It's just not available. It's not there. Same on Facebook, not available, not there. And I really do, you know, I think a lot of it is also strategy, right? Marketing strategy, potentially, like you say, clicks, engagement, right? And if you're on the go, you're not necessarily paying attention to timing. I don't think most people are just kind of paying attention to the post. So, really smart way of going about it, in my opinion. And I find it very interesting because it's night and day for me when I check my phone versus when I'm looking at it, like during, you know, whenever I'm at my desk, it's like, yeah, during the day, no big deal. I'm catching up on what people are posting, when they're posting it. And then at night, it's almost like the recap. It's kind of cool, in that way. And well, yeah, and I'm feeling that AI.
Like if they were able to create different experiences like that, it makes 100% sense because you're not, ads have to be placed differently. Like everything has to be formatted differently. You're going to consume different content when you're on your phone versus, you know, just having it up in the background and listening to a show on your desktop. And it's like, I love thinking about this stuff because this is why AI is so important and so impactful. Like it's going to handle things that we literally complain about all the time and have no means to solve for it, like ourselves, right? And this just continued increase of like the other thing, like we talk about SEO traffic, and you know, all these things going down, the concept of organic, like true organic,
right,
that's a fleeting thought. Because, and just think of it like this, when I message somebody on LinkedIn, when I send them a direct message, it's almost guaranteed that I'm going to see something from them in my feed, right? Even if even if I haven't seen anything from them in weeks, right?
Right.
Because that engagement outside of the feed, direct messaging, right? This engagement behavior has what's been so hard to track because it's not easily tagged as an activity unless you understand the context of the engagement, right? And that's where knowing that, when you know that's how the system works, that's why meaningful engagement will create more visibility on the stuff you want. That's why it's not true organic. Like, if you know mm-hmm. that, it's the difference between just putting a post out there, thinking it's super valuable, and people will find it naturally. It does happen, but it's getting harder and harder because there's so much content. Not dissimilar from the rag situation. There's more and more stuff. If you're going to let AI try to figure out what you want, right, it's not always going to work out. But when you have these coordinated campaigns where you post something and then you engage in certain ways around that thing, that's how you create campaign-like exposure. But it's a 180 difference from the, you know, ads and like just pushing the message out there. Because one of those things, engagement, creates value.
Yeah.
Like, when done the right way. I'm not saying go pitch everybody your products just to meet that. Just get out of that habit of just checking the boxes. And you will realize the value of this new world like so fast, right? Last thing I'll mention, this is how good AI is getting and why you can't keep checking these boxes. Yesterday was the first time I received a LinkedIn pitch about liking my experience and we want to recruit you. And then at least one per day happens. It happened in real time. By the time it got to my screen, the message came up, but they were already a LinkedIn member and not a name, which happens when LinkedIn knows you're trying to game the system and it's a fake account and these things. I didn't even get a chance to see who they were trying to represent themselves at. Like, the system already caught it, right?
That's nuts.
That's where we're at, folks. So there's no, it's funny, like the easy button is just to show up as a human being.
Yep.
That's it.
Like, it's the same. I keep telling people the same thing. It's like, it's so easy, but it's so difficult.
Yes. Man, that one went by fast. Right? So we're going to keep at it. We're also going to get back on the Tech Stack Reimagined this weekend so we can play. So I can get to play with these tools, these connectors that Claude is providing. But yeah, until tomorrow, everybody have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you Thursday morning. Thanks, Nico.
See you guys.